I'll put it.
There we are. If you're all right to introduce yourself.
Yes, well, I'm Sally Brown. I'm a singer-songwriter. I worked professionally as a musician and singer, and was in show business for many years, and then went into cabaret and did a cabaret act across Europe and the UK. I was a vocal multi-instrumentalist, so that is self-explanatory. And then I wanted to come back home to Cornwall, and I was in a show where I had quite a lot of responsibility, and I felt that I wanted to come home. And sadly, my sister passed on, but it gave me the passport to come back to Cornwall. And from then on, it was just wonderful because I just focused on writing music and recording music as well. So this is nothing to do with the story I'm going to tell.
That's all right.
But my grandfather farmed at Trevose for many, many years. I mean, it was in the family for over 100 years, well over 100 years. And he related stories. How true they all are, we don't know for sure. And in the war, he always used to look out because various wreck used to come in. And on this one occasion, he was up on the top of the headland and he thought, what's that there, that thing out there? And he knew where the currents were, so he knew where this so-called, it looked like a barrel to him, right, was going to end up. And sure enough, it came into Mother Ivy's. Now, he thought, now I wonder what's in this barrel. So he opened it up, and inside he found some liquid, and he knew 'twasn't seawater. So he got his son, Willie, to come along. He said, here, boy, he said, there's something in this barrel, and he said, I don't think it is water. So what he did is he got Willie to siphon off a small amount to take it into the chemist in Wadebridge to have it analysed. In the meantime, he emptied the contents into every possible container he could find and hid it. Then he filled it with seawater and put the lid back on the top. Then he contacted the Coast Guards, well, I think they used to call them the preventive people in those days. Then he contacted them to say, here, this barrel has turned up, but he said, I don't think there's anything in it. It's probably, you know, probably seawater. So they said, well, don't touch it. He said, leave it alone and we'll come and have a look. And of course, I opened it up and of course it was seawater in there. And he said, to be very handy, you know, to keep as a water container-like thing. You know, if it rains, I can hang it under that there drain and all that pipe that comes down and I can use it in the garden. So he said, okay. So he paid peanuts for it.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Willie had come back from the chemist in Weybridge and he said, 'tis pure alcohol. And my grandmother was Flemish. And she came over in the First World War, and that's how she met my grandfather down at Port Quinn.
Oh, Port Quinn, oh, lovely.
Yeah, and they got married. There's a long story, but they got married. And anyway, Gran being one of them, they're foreigners, like, from cross channel. She used to know how to make liqueurs.
Wow.
Now, she was in Belgium, you know, when she went to Belgium, she had to get the special essences for making these liqueurs. Like, now, the funny thing is that my grandmother was a teetotaler. Anyway, when she used to come back from Belgium, she used to smuggle back these essences.
Wow.
And made these liqueurs. And I'll tell you something, there was nothing like what the taste of it was in amazing. And the thing is that we all thoroughly enjoyed what she made.
Yeah.
But the thing is, my grandfather couldn't remember all the places where he'd buried the alcohol. They used to use it in the cars. They used to use it in all sorts of different ways. But, you know, as the years went by, Gran ran out of alcohol, the alcohol, so couldn't make any more of these liqueurs. So to this day, somewhere on Trevoux's head, there's still a container or two of pure alcohol.
Brilliant. Oh, brilliant. Oh, that's lovely.
Oh, wow, what an amazing story. Yeah.
This is Sally again.
Yes. Well, it was when I bought my cottage, and it was in a terrible state. But as soon as I went into the place, I knew that I could write music there. And I wanted a sign to convince me that I'd made the right decision. And as I walked out the front gate, there was wild parsley growing on the hedge. Oh. And that was my sign. And from that, I bought the cottage, but it was in a terrible state. But a dear old boy called Dennis Cahart, he worked as a builder for my father and his brother, because they had a building business, and my dad was an architect in Wadebridge. And he did all his apprenticeship there. He was a really good builder, but he always wore a cap, and he always had his pipe hanging out of his mouth. He was digging the drain, and he was down in the ground, and on the radio, suddenly, it was Radio 4, and they said, now here we have a song written by Sally Brown, and it's called The Rockets of Padstow. And I went outside to you know, Dennis, and he was there digging away. And I said, oh, Dennis, I said, I've gone up in the world. I said, they've just played one of my songs on Radio 4. And he went, oh, yeah. That was it.
Brought you back down to earth.
Oh, you're not kidding, yeah. Oh, I laughed about that. Oh. And he just carried on digging. Oh, yeah.
High praise.
Yeah.
Oh. So you say, tell me a bit about your cabaret. What was it? You said it was self-explanatory, the vocal.
Yeah, well, I played lots of instruments and sang and, you know, I obviously, I played the piano. I didn't use that so much in my cabaret act because you can't cart a piano around with you. But I did. I recorded all my backings. And at the time, Equity were very, very strict. And you weren't allowed to have any backing recordings.
Oh.
But because I did them all myself...
And it was your show.
They couldn't touch me.
Ah.
But of course now people buy all these, you know. So... Yes, so I did all my own backings, and I played the...
What was your cabaret show called?
The Voices and Sounds of Sally Brown.
Oh.
You know, as I say, but I didn't do that when I was working on the continent. I was working with a show.
Uh-huh.
And I was their leading lady in the show, and we worked all over the place.
What was it called?
Well, it was the Gerry Atkins Show Ballet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And the only reason I did it in Europe was because we were going to do 6 months in South America, and I always wanted to go to South America.
Wow.
And being in South America, I was so excited about it. And about 2 weeks before we finished in Europe, which was 6 months, Gerry said, I've got some bad news for you. He said, I'm afraid the trip to South America's off.
Aww.
And I thought, oh, no, the whole reason I did it was...
Oh.
But...
And what shows did you do in the West End?
Well, I did pantomime with Tommy Steele at the London Palladium.
Wow.
Which was quite an experience, which was great. I did shows with Danny LaRue. I did shows with Michael Bentine. I did lots and lots.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, because I, as I say, I worked with Knee-High for many years, and we were
very well-respected company.
Yeah, well, we were lucky because we did lots of national touring, but we did lots of international touring as well. And we were at one time we did a show for the British Council, so we ended up going to China and Syria.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, it must
have
been.
It was amazing. And
because it's when you look back on these things, isn't it?
That you think, how did I do that? Yeah. And it was very, I think the other thing which was interesting about the company is that we all did a bit of everything. So we all did a bit of dancing, a bit of singing, a bit of playing music, a bit of, you know, kind of all more quite rounded in many ways. I mean, we weren't necessarily the best musicians or the best singers, but but we could do, and that's had a nice feeling about the company. It was kind of, it was very, you know, engaging for an audience, I think. Yeah. God, how fantastic. That's amazing. Did you ever do cruise liners or anything like that?
No, I was offered them, but I never wanted
it. Want to do that,
I
yeah.
thought, the, you know, being stuck on a ship all that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a bit of a loner in many respects.
Right, OK.
So the thought of being on a ship, and I thought, what if you don't get on with the people?
Yes, fair enough.
You're stuck. Fair enough. And I knew very well that, you know, if you did cabaret on a ship, it involved a lot more than just doing the cabaret.
Yeah, sure.
You know, you were involved in a lot of dog's body work, as it were.
Did you have a, have you got a highlight? Like, is there anything show-wise or anything? I'm asking you that because I'm personally interested. Like, is there any like specific show you went, oh, that was...
I think it was when I actually did the performance of Lioness with my friend.
Ah.
And we did our first performance. She narrated the story because she wrote the story based on facts. She narrated the story and I... perform the songs, and I mean, I just sat at my piano and the music just flowed out.
And this is your own show that you've written?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
It just flowed out. And we did our first performance to an invited audience at St. Meryn Church.
Oh.
And full. It was a full house. And when we finished, the people said, when can we see it again? And that meant so much because it was me just singing, but it was obviously the music, the words, the narration. People were there.
Yeah, brilliant.
And that to me was so special.
Oh, that's lovely. I'm just going to put that down as a... Thank you. Sally Brown again.
Right, well, Charlotte Diamond was supposed to have been murdered by Matthew Weeks on Bodmin Moor. And there has, you know, below... a router there, by a stream, there's a monument to Charlotte Diamond, and I never believed that Matthew Weeks killed her, and I've always had that feeling. And I've got standing stones in my garden which I never asked for, but they were given to me, and they were delivered by a woodman, a quarryman and a stone man, and I didn't pay a penny for them. They were just given to me. They're very powerful. But I named one of them. Most of the characters are from the musical Lioness.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the characters was Charlotte Diamond. And I always believed that Matthew Weeks was innocent. And I believed that she actually committed suicide.
Oh, okay.
And a friend of mine who came to my cottage... the reason I met this person was because we did a peace day in London at the Wembley Arena in 1994, and I opened it with a song that I wrote called I Am You Are, devoted to Mother Earth, humanity, you know, and that was an amazing day too. And that's how I met this friend, this was following, who'd also gone to this day in London, a peace day in London. I met afterwards, and a very, very psychic person. And we just clicked from the word go. And she was in the garden, and I was pointing out all the stones. And then I pointed to Charlotte Diamond, and I told the story of Charlotte Diamond. And she immediately said, that's the truth.
Oh, okay, wow.
So,
wow.
That was, you know, I do go by my gut feelings and intuition.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I swear by it too.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Oh, thank you. It's, yeah.
Oh, let's go back. But it was a, you know, Matthew Weeks was hanged in Bodmin Jail.
Oh, was he?
So basically the song is telling the story of what happened, but at the end, you know, talking about being by the stream and... is it you who stands beside the stream? Is it you, can't remember all my words now, who walks across the moors? Is it you who, something or other? Or are you just a vision in a dream, Charlotte Diamond? So.
Oh.
But in the end, it's leaving that question mark for people to decide for themselves.
Yeah. Wow. Sally's theatre stories.
Well, this was at the London Palladium, and the star of the show was Tommy Steele. And there's an opening number, and some of us were dressed as very posh ladies in these very elegant gowns with great trains, you know, behind, and high hats, which I hated wearing, having very fine hair. Hats would never stay properly on my head. And then there we are, gracing ourselves across the stage, and then coming back the other way. This is just prior to Tommy's big opening. And my train of... my dress got caught in the floor mic.
Oh, no.
The stage. And, of course, the orchestra laughing their heads off because they could see... And I was smiling to the audience. I was stuck. I can't move. And I was trying to do all these movements to try. And then various members of the cast kept coming across trying to, you know, unhitch
surreptitiously,
me.
Surreptitiously, yeah.
Yeah, surreptitiously, yeah. And then another one would come across, and I was just stuck there, and it was literally seconds before Tommy was going to do his great big entrance, and I'm there, centre stage. And I thought, for God's sake, somebody do something. And then another person came along and gave a yank, and I gave a huge yank, and the microphone was going like that. And I got freed. And I sort of went off as if nothing was amiss. And Tommy came on, and afterwards he came up to me. He said, here, he said, you trying to steal my limelight? I said, no, I'm sorry, Tommy. I said, I got stuck.
Oh,
but it was funny, trying to keep a straight face and at the same time thinking, well, what am I going to do if this...
What actually happens if I'm permanently stuck? Oh, my Lord. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, thank you.
Oh,